to report on behalf of the committee of item 10. Alright, since the chair is not here, she's only managing to speak.
I know our committee, the chair is not there. There's a work for somebody else in court, but okay, we're not yet on parliament. Fine. Let's go on then to, shall we skip the other items and go to the PBO? So the timing is here. Can you start, please? You have all got a copy of the link. Can we just take in the first instance, apologies, the chair of the Minerals is very clear about that. So we'll do it. Put the amendment to the agenda in very formal. Any apology, please? Oh, okay. John George is on finance, not available. He's on leave. The next thing is welcome. Okay. I'll hand over to Comrade Smith. Welcome, everybody. Since you feel so strongly about that.
We're concerned that now, one thing that there was a super challenge is that I was agreed that Honorable Kami will chair this session so that we can fast track the process because of time conflict. But I think it would be proper to say that there's been a lot of discussion and preparation that have been made in relation to the issue of transport pricing, tax-based lodging, and profit shifting. This matter in our own, just to say summary, in our own intention, we realize that it cuts across committees, be it finance, be it mineral resources, be it trade and industry, economic development, and we see the list is growing. Appropriation also has got an interest. I must say also, what is this? All those developing interests to say they are highly affected by the phenomenon in relation to their own problem. So I think that it's a matter that we are coming to the conclusion that in the final analysis they require to be seen. Mineral resources have passed the back and said the main issue on tax-based erosion, including the transfer policy, is a tax revenue matter. And therefore, finance is more strategically located. Finance is a trade policy matter. So, the only issue that we know is that we extract minerals. They make a meaning of minerals when they are above the soil. So, we hope that Finland will have a clear approach that will assist us. And hopefully there will be participation. And lastly, we are not expecting that everything will be finalized today. But we think that there will be clarity of procedure at least before we deal with the conclusion of this matter. So everyone is absolutely welcome, and hopefully we will have a meaningful engagement, and in the final analysis we'll be able to drive a way forward. I think on that note, I welcome everyone. Thank you very much.
Basically, we also have two society here. Some of them were actively engaged in this matter to trade in particular minerals and climate change. But this isn't a public hearing. These are matters that we will decide on after today's briefing. We also have the chair, Charles Tapia, of the Committee of Finance on the NDOB side. As the chair of Windows explained, the aim today is simply to get a briefing, and then for the chairs and the votes to be to decide on a way forward and consult with our committees collectively and evolve a program. I think the intention isn't to have endless discussion. The aim is to actually act. There are elements of policy that the majority party has and that government has in different portfolios. We need to pull it together and we need to move forward expeditiously. So we also thank people who called us and all made written representations to the Finance Commission. But we have explained that it's one parliament. And we've already had public hearings via the Trade and Industry Committee. All the submissions that were presented to the Trade and Industry Committee, all the copies, will, the report will be presented today, but the copies of the submissions will, within 7 days, be sent out by the committee secretaries to the non-trade industry members, that means the two other committees. Is that okay? So that we all have it. So we're not going to have yet another public hearing. We are taking into account the public hearings held already, and then decide whether we need further submissions on public hearings. But we will try to pull things together at the end and see whether there's some broad consensus among the committees on a way forward. And to say that this is co-chairing, I'm just coordinating. The two chairs will come in as and when they want. They don't put their hand up. And their job is also to facilitate. They're not here just to say, yes, you speak, you speak, you speak. There's not anybody can do. Automatic robot can do that. Right? You can do the digitally see who hands up and say, right, go to even know your names. Here we're meant to facilitate. So we move forward and not have endless academic discussions. We really don't have the energy or time for that. Just 21 years later, this session should have been attended 2 years ago. We need to move fast, but sensibly and sensitively. Over to you, John. You can say a preliminary remark and then go on to the first item.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We really appreciated the invitation which came some time back to join finance in a broader meeting than simply ourselves in finance, but as has been explained, with mineral resources, but also with many others. In fact, essentially to ensure that we avoided the silo approach and included every committee that on which believes that they do have an interest in or impacts on their mandate. And that is exactly how we came across transfer pricing, if I may, Chair. Thank you. So we also asked the Chairperson of Finance to coordinate us. I know we sometimes talk of the Troika, but we, even in that, you actually have one person holding the reins and not five or three. So we have the same approach now. And essentially our concern is the Industrial Policy Action Plan, on the one hand, and the higher value addition there. And whatever impacts on that negatively has to be of interest to trade and industry. And how do we deal with that? The other issue that came up was broad-based black economic empowerment and the legislation that was passed there and the need for that to be in alignment as well. And we found that our relationship with mineral resources was much closer than any of us realized. And the intention, the main intention of broad-based black economic empowerment, which was the radical transformation of ownership patterns and so on, and so that we could establish an inclusive economy, we found that various forms of transfer pricing impacted negatively on the funds that remained in the companies and in South Africa. When we think of transfer pricing, we may only think of taxation. We became aware that there's also the underreporting of commodity pricing in favor of contract pricing or recommended pricing. In fact, the non-reporting of a full range of products, inflated expenditure, which was used to inflate products locally. A very thin form of capitalization. And then the transfer between two South African-based companies, which are connected, but the transfer is towards the company carrying an assessed loss. Again, that links directly up with finance, etc. And then we have the fictions around Section 26 and the MPREA. I'm trying to move quite fast simply towards the issues that were of interest to all of us. And just to come back to the BEE, I think that we began to realize towards the end that labor should also have been included, because the funds that remain in the country could be better utilized for redistribution, which included, of course, the workers themselves. The other issue is the whole question of government parastatals and the development funders, which must at all times ensure that the investments they make are not companies that should that participate in transfer pricing. Because we found that even parastatals had this involvement, and which they didn't always recognize as such. But the main issue for us was it began to be seen by many of those who made an input during the colloquium that transfer pricing is neutral. And certainly from a trade and industry perspective, we would like to say it depends on how you interpret it. One could say a gun is neutral. We know perfectly well the majority of cases in which a gun is used is not for neutral cases at all. Usually the term is to neutralize someone, which means kill. So it's the same with transfer pricing. We can't simply see it as a neutral instrument, an instrument that is not even blunt, it's very sharp. The other question, as I said earlier, relates to the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Act, and we know that our colleagues there are looking at Section 102 and also the issue in relation to 26% black ownership. Currently, the ownership that we all thought we were ensuring or changing in the country, we thought we'd bring this about 15 years ago, 10 years ago. It was only recently we realized that it was incumbent in the same way that you own half. The other issue was around iron ore in particular and the platinum group of metals. Unlike gold, where prices are determined here in the companies, the market price that comes back here, and a lot of other strategic minerals, those prices are set by the marketing companies overseas. And yet that's quite legal. It is quite legal. The question is that the kind of economy we want to continue in our country? Do we want to continue things as they are, with legal ownership, but not the ownership that transforms our country, which indicates that we would like to have it more inclusive, meaning that the population profile should be reflected in the ownership of our country. That's what should reflect that. In the same way, in, shall we say, Germany, you don't have, you know, 70% of the ownership of by Africans. You have it of the nationals there. So we'd like to achieve the same sort of fair spread in our own country. The last point I'd like to raise here is that we were pleased to come here because the taxation issues cannot be directly addressed by ourselves. They address by finance, and we know you are doing that. The other issue is you opened the door so we could engage with mineral resources effectively, and under them comes the MPRDA. So with two pieces of legislation mandated in other committees, we would like them to consider a review in this direction so that we re-examine the taxation issues, and we also look towards the establishment of a developmental price in this regard. And the final word I would like to make in this area is that the SARS plays a large role, and the Financial Intelligence Center is a critical instrument in ensuring that funds are not laundered out of the country, but remain here for legitimate activities. I would like to thank you, Chairperson, for giving us this opportunity. The full report is here, and it may be of interest to members to know that the variety of people who shared their information, knowledge, etc. with us range from Sumner to Honorable Shivambu to Justice Davis to the National Union of Mine Workers to Professor Turok, Mr. Madula from Trade and Industry, Deloitte, Mr. Gerbert, Professor Hatting from the University of Cape Town, and also people from the AIDC, very important. And there were, we also consulted the Organization of African Unity, Union Work, which was done jointly with former President Mbeki as well in this area. So all of this was consulted, and work that they contribute to us has proved of great value and we begin to explore this. Our final key, Chairperson, is that we do reach a position where there is an acknowledgement that when something is legal, does not make that mean that it is socially just. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. You'll see by the program, we thought that because there's a lot of overlap between the reports of the various committees and what the PBOs could do, we'll have a discussion at the end. I conferred with the chair of Minerals, and he says, well, since we've been working together since November last year, it's fine. He's already made his preliminary remarks. As far as finance goes, very quickly, we took up this issue partly through our engagement with the budget report, through the budget report, but the budget consideration last year of National Treasury and SARS, the issue came up there. And subsequent to that, the EFF in our committee, via Mr. Shivambul Floyd, has been raising this issue persistently, so we said, fine, beyond repeating the rhetoric, what substance have you got? What do you think that's new that we haven't heard of before? And we invited him to make a submission. And these are the two occasions that the committee met, the one with the Minerals Committee in the Lala. He was unable to be present and subsequently requested that he present a point of view of his party to the committee, which we considered yesterday. And the outcome is the following. One is that there was an agreement in the committee that this is not a party political matter. It doesn't matter who raised it. One looks at the substance of the argument. So we agree that the document that EFF presented is now in the circulation. The PBO has got it, supplied its mind to it. Really, I think the committee members have all got it as part of the documentation. There were 9 proposals that came yesterday from the EFF. Some of them are happening already. For example, the idea that we should work as a multi-committee, parliamentary structure, is beginning to happen, and as the chair of Community Zupo said, we want to expand it even further. Work is already done by trade and industry, some by Minerals, and some by our own committee, and we're bringing that together in our first attempt here. There was also a suggestion that Finance Intelligence Committee, Intelligence Center works on this, that is beginning to happen already, and so on. So these recommendations will be inserted into the process, and those that the majority agree on, doesn't matter where it comes from. You know, we would take forward, and those that we disagree on, the minority will have to accept. That's the way democracy works. So I think that there's a certain degree of consensus, certainly within the Finance Committee. However, one party, the DA, raises concerns about being slightly careful about the way we manage this matter, because it will affect business, big business in particular. I think the subject of the DA, and they'll feed their views into today's meeting, was that when we're mining is at the moment, one has to be slightly cautious about the consequences of tackling this too quickly and at the wrong time. But broadly, as I understand it, all parties, including the DA, agree, as the chair of the minister said, that this is not on. We're pleased to see also the Deputy Minister of Finance here, Sir Deputy Minister, and I know that Treasury has got a senior team here, as indeed has, I think, the South African Revenue Service, am I right, Cindy? Where is Cindy? Yeah, they're here as well, South, is that right? We asked for the South African Reserve Bank to be here, but we must confess it's very late notice, and they may not be here, but they will be pleased on what comes out of this meeting, and I understand the appropriate representatives of trade and industry and minerals are here. So having said that, this report is effectively, we must say that the Minerals Committee and ourselves have been working together since November 10th, when we met. Both of us mandated the PBO to do work based on the work that had been done up to then. And they have also looked at the EFF proposals. Then we drew in trade and industry, but they explained to us that they've already got a momentum, they already started this process, and in fact the angle, as the chair said, is from their concerns on IFAP and BEE. So we said fine, and they brought their work here. And now we all work together and expand. But having said that, I think from finance side, not what much to say. It's the PBO that the three committees mandated to do some work in regard to. And then unless there's any questions, we'll deal with deliberations. Can we hand over to PBO? That commission is the one that's been distributed to you. And it's Professor Diana Zimitali who will deal with the presentation. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Co-Chair.
Can I just suggest something, if I may? can you speak very simply? You don't have the technical expertise that, you know, you and Tumasani have with your PhDs and all that. We are mere politicians. I speak myself anyway. I won't understand things unless they explain very simply to me. Simple, precise, concise, you know, stuff. So that everybody understands. Starting with me, I'm at the lowest level here. So you know, start with me. If I don't understand it, I'm going to intervene and pull out the chair. Just explain simply what the issues are.
Thank you. Thank you, coaches, honorable members, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mohammed Jais, and I'm from the Parliamentary Budget Office. And for those of us who don't know what it is, we are an office which provides technical support to the Finance and Appropriation Committees in Parliament, and also to some of the other committees in Parliament as well, especially around economic and fiscal issues and matters. Chair, yes, we will address it very simply, and I think that's the intention. And if we start by indicating that I think by achieving the objectives of the MEP, the component parts that we need to ensure implementation, IPAC, mineral resources, fiscal resources, etc., must be deployed efficiently. And of course, in this sense, you need to finance the implementation of the MEP as well. So this is the broad context I think we need to look at, the context of the problem that we are discussing. Of course, we know the tax revenues play an important role in financing government programs. So the key component of how we pay for government programs. And of course, if you abuse the system, whether it be through base erosion or profit shifting, which I'm sure we will clarify as we go along as well, and transfer mispricing, this impacts on our finance, our development program in our country. And I think if you look at it internationally, and our research is based both on international and local research. If you look at it internationally, this is a critical issue, whether it be for the private or the public sector in this regard. We know that government has put in measures, and we call on both Deputy Minister, thank you very much for being here, and the Minister, in terms of some of the actions that have been taken by government. So now, it's not that anything has not been done. Work has been done. We need to build on it going forward. So, on behalf of the committee, and from the TRI that the Committee of Finance presented to us, we want to identify the key problems relating to tax and the legislative abuse of this. We want to highlight some of the key considerations for oversight, because I think that's the purpose of our meeting here. And we want to highlight some pros and cons. I think that you can take into account and say, this is the direction we need to take as we go forward in this regard. So, honourable members, as I say, our research has been based both on primary and secondary research. We've looked at best practices, evidence, lesson of experience. And I'm going to ask my colleagues, Dr. Yankees and Dr. Sekatari, to take us through the presentation and then ask for any questions for clarity, etc. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Honourable Chair, my name. Honourable members, colleagues, my name. I'll take you through the slide. I've prepared some of our reports. Just to alarm you, last night we were just updating some of the items that were not necessarily there. So I updated the slide. It's not a major thing. Quick outline of the presentation. We're looking at, as the director has explained, our mandate. We'll try to highlight specific objectives. So why over the paper? I'd like to do a bit of a context. We try as much as we can not to be very technical, as much as possible. Sometimes we'll be forced to think, but initially, we'll try to start that where it's happening. So, give us context of taxation context. We look at the approach that South Africa using in today to deal with transfer pricing problems. We also look at initial experience, what other countries are doing, and so on. And we'll also look at the impact on fiscal impact or the losses on the different part of the transfer dispersing. We have a bit of a zoom as well to mine and inflation, that's where by the committee. We have a bit of a zoom on the mining industry, what are the issues and the implications. There's quite a high prevalence of volume of inflation that I experienced to have this price meeting place. And we also look at the foreign federation focus on and legislative forces control. So that's the outline for the paper. I'm not going to bore you much with the in terms of money bill, kind of going with that, the information and presentation there. Going back to the objects of the paper chair, so we can approach, we can impact, we can the mining sector, looking at experience out elsewhere. We'll look at the effect of the practice and so on. Just I'd like to mention something very quickly, Chair. There's so much work that has been done with regards to what we're here for. So most of our work will refer to previous work been done by other colleagues and so on. So there's specific area where we did quite a specific detailed analysis on the mining and practice industry. We'll look at specific things there. That's a quick rationale behind the tax, the taxation. It's precisely many countries make use of tax revenue to provide different services to citizens and other service users. Like in South Africa, the constitution emphasized the importance of government providing goods and services to citizens. As a result, South Africa and others rely on tax revenue to be able to provide those services. So it's trying to bring the context there. In our case, the government imposed direct and indirect taxes to residents and non-residents in the industrial context. So that's to bring the context of what we're doing here. Residents, meaning the income that the residents make elsewhere, or worldwide, gets taxed, and including South Africa, gets taxed, and government makes revenue from that. Non-residents, all the multinational corporations, or all non-residents, when they make money in South Africa, that money should be taxed so that the revenue to make money should get shared from there. So that's the bit of context there. In South African context, we have mainly three areas of taxation, individual transactions and corporate taxes. That's where, principally, where the revenue is generated in terms of tax revenue for the process. We did a bit of analysis for the past 6 years or so. There's been the indication that individual taxes have been contributing 33% on average towards the tax revenue of South Africa. And your transaction tax, that's also contributes 6% on average, and corporate tax has contributed 2% on average in the past 6 years or so on average. So it's through that tax revenue that government is able to deliver services as entirely in the constitution there. A quick analysis in terms of how does that work. Individual tax, bigger income, the specific income that the direct tax, which is not supposed to be taxed. You less specific expenditure, or specific expenditure like professional medical aid, that also get deducted from the money before the tax. From there, your personal income, which is where the tax is generated by government. So collectively, that money gets used to be part of the tax revenue. Of course, with individual, there's a tax table that gets used, which is updated annually, where it indicates how much tax individuals has to pay, and so on. The next bit is VAT, which is precisely based on transactions. The tax based on transactions. That's actually meaning if we trade, the level of tax that government generates from those transactions, depending on different types of transactions. Say 15%, the other transaction that doesn't have a direct sense for the nature's expenses, or that as well as VAT. So 14% is used to generate revenue from certain transactions. But of course, the detailed explanation, which is non-quote from that. The third bit is corporate taxation. Corporate taxation, I use the word highlighted just to reference sake. So you have gross income, so it's main income that's generated by the company, and you also have exempted income that would not necessarily be taxed as well as a result of incentives or whatever, kind of like I've given a concession grant, concession development grant. Then you have income, which is the A minus B, then you have your income. I did not really avoid putting figures on the to avoid debating from the main discussion here. And from there, you have your income, you have your cost of production, what I would say, cost of production, that are allowed to be deducted by law. And from there, you have passive income. Only after listing those expenditures, you have an amount from which staff can calculate tax to be paid in to the national revenue fund. Now from there, from the technical income, we use the tax rate to calculate what's due by the company or by SD or by the taxpayer to the fiscal zero. But of course, that's for other, the small business where they use the W tax rate. If the taxable income is this much, is how much we used to pay, so and so on. But the reason why this is 28% which can't be done there. Now, say, there's a big question I, you know, I'm trying to visualize. What's the problem, say, why I'm seeing it? What are the main tools there? The bigger problem is the fact that the taxable, going back to the reference I mentioned earlier on, the tax here, which is F on the trade line, often some multinational tax here, including multinational corporations, they unfairly reduce that amount to so that they reduce this amount, they reduce that amount, tax income, so that they should pay lesser tax. So they unfairly use this law, sometimes they use law just to unfairly reduce the amount to say you should pay better tax. How do they do that? They either inflate the expenditure, they either inflate number D, the DS, they either inflate D, meaning they inflate expenses. So we said we let expenses from the income floor, it will get calculated. So they inflate expenses as about the taxable. Income will be lesser, which means the taxable payable will also be lesser, or the tax level will be lesser in that sense. The second is they either inflate the income, they inflate the income, meaning the A there is made smaller. When that is smaller, it means the income will be, the taxable income will also be smaller. So some of the main issues there. So that's they either inflate the inflate income they have, or they inflate the expenditure. Then that is fixed, lesser tax or lesser. These are some examples how they do it. They inflate expenditure, as you see, that's been explained, or they sell the community, the lower price, that's what we're just alluding to now. Or they just delay the transaction, not just because they delay the transaction, and still time that the market price or it's the same level. So that's the principle, the main problem with the transfer type in there. So that is the main problem, the inflation of the expenditure or inflation of I give an example, let's say, what happens to somebody if dad and son have a business, there's differences, there's a business, the dad will sell a commodity which is cheaper price to the son, but the income is still in the same company now, because it's a multinational company, it has a bigger office out there in Abidjan, and it is a main parent company out elsewhere. In a subsidiary in South Africa, whereby the South African company will sell the community at a lower price to that foreign company, as a result, it's used the taxable income in South Africa. But even another example is what we say, it's quite complicated in instances whereby, apart from this practice of distorting the price, it happens through different entities, whereby sometimes entities use non-connected, but one of the things I didn't highlight, what happens most of the time is, Indian and Indian distort the price. They use it's what we call connected person between the subsidiary and the holding entity, which is a connected person. So now, in our instance, it happens within the use of non-connected person, which is a third party. Now, I have a transaction. I have a transaction with another company elsewhere, which is not connected to me, somebody else. But that's in the same country or different country. That same company trade with my connected person there. So it's an arrangement which still was the same problem, that, you know, the practice is sorted. Because the only instance is when you get whether the country is sorted or not, you get whether the people, whether the trading entities, were they connected or not. Now, in the instance, they're not connected, but because they get connected outside, that's what it's that hard to get connected. It still comes a transfer in price. If the price is not consumed, they understand. So now, let's try to contextualize the problem, which I think will lay some discussion going forward. Now, what is South African approach to this? South African approach to this is... Oh, before we get to the South African approach, I wanted to give a bit of context to some of the things that we're talking about, not talking about, defined or that is defined by the law. Transferizing simply the transfer, the price that we use, the price is used by multinational companies to trade. What is the price that they use? That's called transfer price. The price at which they trade here is called transfer price. Multinational companies trading with another in elsewhere is called transfer pricing. Transfer pricing, okay, to qualify that again, this is legal way of trading, it's seen as legal form. There's nothing wrong with that to have a transfer price there. The problem is the Chansan Nisaj, whereby the same product we use to trade with other entities, the same product we use to trade with the connected person, it gets dispossessed. Or just misinterpreted. You know, we sell bread for buy five instead of selling bread for France. That's mistimed. So that's where the problem is at the moment. So there's a lot of that. The money gets taken away from the country because of that distortion. Because you sell a bread from somebody else for 5 francs, it's worth 10 francs. And that person takes the same bread and sells it elsewhere for 10 francs. And that 5 francs has gone away from the country. Supposed to be tax, which is part of the tax revenue. So that's the problem. The transfer. Now, one of the concepts, one of the main approach, one of the main concepts is it's use the arms race. Now, in our international context, the main approach to deal with transfer mispricing is to say, is the price that's been traded, is the price that's been traded, is this the same price it would have been if the bread was traded between different companies? I sell bread to Director sitting here, sitting in Mafike. If I was sending somebody a food, that price would be the same. You know, that was called answer. Well, the price is it the price, and normal price that's been sold, if it's in a similar place. It's the same price that would have been used if the transaction was between different people. So that's one of the key issues. But of course, the answer is a very difficult concept because, you know, it's understood from different aspects. Sometimes we use market price, sometimes we use, comparable price, say, if there's a transaction elsewhere, how much, what are the transactions, what are the arrangements. So there's so much problems within there. Sometimes the market price, which market price, and so on. So that's another concept. So going back to the South African approach, the second legislation, which is there to deal with transfer pricing, which leads to base ocean and price shifting. Section 21 on income tax, the main legislation, tax legislation provision, would say, we need to look at transaction whether it was in unfairness. If a staff heads of station or feels that or they've done this meant to say this transaction it's not just transaction between two taxpayers, it's not we see it's not regarded as unfairness. From that meant when they look at the price and readjust back the price, say not adjust back the price to an unfairness and check the machinery on that route. Also, there's a particular measures used to collect information from the entities, say, what instruments are used. Before I question, there's two ways to address that. It's firstly to adjust back the price, to take it back to an instrument or price, the tender, that I mentioned earlier, take it back to tender, and take that difference, take back to take the whole, the arrangement between 8%, and go back the difference between the difference, and test again at a 15% level. Another measure, which I think is useful as well, is the data collection instruments used to give it to the entities or taxpayers. That is a very useful instrument used to collect information. At times, OECD guidelines are used to address, to help us to ensure the transaction is unfairness. There's also practice notes on the guidelines to give in to taxpayers. This is how the legislation should be implemented. So there are guidelines that are used. There's also been recently transparency units established within SAS, which points these things or try to follow through some of these transactions to ensure that there's no time. And recently they've recovered 5.8 billion, with the assessment of the deed. And also, Chair, going from yesterday as well, there was a discussion about tax cities. That's one of the tools that is used to try to tap the problem. So it's a very useful tool there, which is very important for overnight there. Some of the noted reports with the legislations, which is also noted by the National Treasury and other agencies, it's the national cities, it needs to be updated. It has been a problem by the world has moved on. You know, the world is becoming globalized, economy, so our inflation has improved to be compatible with the process at the moment. So there is that room to improve the inflation. National Treasury through DTC and have been trying to get through to the National House through the work done by DTC and agencies trying to improve the current inflation. There's also one point, one of the challenges with dealing with AMSEMs or dealing with the problem that entities or taxpayers aren't obligated to provide information for assessment, whether the transaction to say or not. So that element, as we say, is voluntary at the moment, because we may disclose or at times what I find out they delay sometimes, they delay the process because they give in 3 years, don't give in 3 years, and they delay the process to record and things such have by information not given. So at the moment, this is not mandatory, but it's voluntary. Personal compliance length is not personal, because if you want to say outstanding, if you don't have a comparable figure, or it's not easy to get to that, it's so difficult to say keep your company, which at the time makes it difficult for us to determine what amount you have lost and so on. And also, I mean, there have been complaints or comparison with our SARS units, say some entities, some countries have big types of units which are, you know, so helpful. So I think we also need to consider that as a bigger point. Say our units in SARS quite small, it should be built up on this. And also one of them mentioned that the guideline that was given out there. It's at a stage, you know, we said to the legislation that the guideline that's given to the how to apply. Just to say the guidelines are not binding, it's just a guideline. No, it's not really binding there. So I think it's one of the noted reasons as well. And also one of the points that we identified is that the data collection instruments that are used at the moment, the question is, are they providing useful information as they are? You know, the sense that some information is not getting through to the staff. I mean, look at the instrument itself. This, that question is, are they providing all the necessary information? So that's the main approach and some of the loopholes that obviously we just will say this in there. Now, from there, we move to the impact. And the impact now in our famous context, we look at what are the revenues of and at the heart of transfer pricing or transfer of big dosing of pricing. What are the other impact? What are the revenues? Then there's at the stage no conclusive evidence to suggest or to quantify accurately how much transfer is losing as a result of this practice. But that does not necessarily mean The point I want to bring, there is always challenging in leaders. There is two, and I think there's two animals that we're dealing with, share, I want to highlight, which I think is always important to highlight, because it always helps that we're getting in the approach to chasing and mitigating. There's the legal side of things, which is, you know, illegal, illicit flow. There's the legal side of things, which is the transfer pricing. Now, many of the discussions out there, many discussions in the public domain, various reports, they look at it consolidated. They look at it as a big thing to say, this is the home run, transfer, or they get consulting. It also has to always separate it, because the illegal side, we normally discuss it. It's illegal, and it's really kept without any discussion. You know, that's playing there. Now, the legal side, it's within the law, but it's immoral, as you say. How do you go about trusting with that? That you have a different approach to dealing with that. So I think all the time we get this, because it helps the discussion and it makes it more helpful. Some of the examples there, and trying to provide from the African report, they illicit drug trafficking, human trafficking, all these other examples, and the legal way of doing it. Use the law, the legal framework, but exploit it. So that's it. And then that's what our people focus on, as you said, as obviously, focus mainly on the legal side of it. What are the logos in the legal form on it? I just wanted to emphasize that. Now, going back to the impact, there's been much work that's been done. We didn't do it ourselves, but we looked at different, there's one entity that's been quoted so much, different support, Global Intensive Fund Integrity, which says South Africa is using 12 billion per year as a result of both illegal and legal way of eroding the profit in the country. I mentioned that deliberately, both legally, so they have not also separated that. So the existing top billion will intervene annually by 2014, which Alfred Moita says that's what it could be useful annually. It could be useful, it could save up, you know, students, Nasabat and so on. Some of the examples on what the losses could be used for. But again, I mentioned earlier on, I haven't engaged with the 2000 secretary. I use the pot, but at that moment there isn't any percentage figure or anybody who's confident can put a figure out that this is the problem. So I'm putting the figure out there just for discussion purposes. The good thing for us is also that we've been doing some work. I spoke to the colleagues in South. They are currently doing some work trying to find some of these problems. They recently discussed how that principle that form mid-price transactions, which is quite a good thing over 3 years. And that might also come us back to the business, which I think is the thing that's worth putting there. But now, the honorable chair, Lucy, mining industry becomes a very important thing because when you guess what money is recovered by SACS, 55% of that were transactions in mining industry. So it is a very worth noting. There's also been issues raised about financial sector, what happened in the financial sector, but hasn't been checked what's been done in that front. So this is how the SACS recovered money has been spread around. It's mining industry, manufacturing, communication, and retail and others there. So this is how 3.4 billion was in the mining industry, mining transaction industry. A few transactions, but the volume of transactions is quite heavy. So 3.4 billion, the first transaction in manufacturing, 8.6 million there, and others spread around other industries. So now this is for mining industry, mining transaction industry is a big one there. So much work there. Not that others are not important. Chair, honorable Fox, the slide there, what we're saying there, I think we've raised this point during the interview in February. We're saying there are business incentives that are just beginning out there to business. It's a good thing. But now, what has been the impact? We start having a discussion. What has been the impact? Or what is the additional kind of business incentives? Now, argument is saying, is there a double loss there? Giving us business incentives because that's not intention to have loss. But at the same time, in business, they are looking at the problem. So we just want to highlight this, say, what has been the impact of them? We need to have that discussion. Of course, there are, I think there was a discussion with the districts and was back there in discussion sometime last month where they tried to come up with discussions, which is quite a good discussion. I'm saying, let's bring the discussion, bring it there. Leaving the side of the impact, looking at non-intentional expenses, specifically, we looked at what other countries' expenses on. It is quite clear. Housing is quite clear. It's the intentional problem. It's the intentional problem that developed countries are experiencing. The developing countries are experiencing this. One discussion with a member of the GTC was that at least South Africa was one of the best models that is recognized in fighting. Our approach is one of the best firms that we use there. So we said there's so much loopholes, especially when you compare to other developing countries there. But now, one of the instruments that is used by other countries, more so those aligned with OECD, is the advanced pricing agreement model or instrument, which is a it's more of a inherent method to say, let's agree on this arrangement. Let's say this arrangement is effective in terms of productivity going forward. So it's one of the most, this has been considered, as far as I'm concerned, by the National Trader to bring into South Africa as a model. So I find by the agreement to just say, let's see on the taxability, get an agreement to say, this is how we're going to determine transfer price for the next 3 years or the next 4 years, whatever. So this is an arrangement between taxpayer and the tax authority. So the argument is say you're in a way moving all the complications, say, you know, from going for next year, this tax bill will be compliant and will be certain about the revenue outcome and so on and so forth. Some of the countries, some of the countries have APA as a strategy. Some of the benefits, as you say, you said certainty with regards to tax outcome in the transaction with the arrangements were agreed on. There's less work to be done by audit. There's a reduction of compliance by even the taxpayer and others. Taxpayers also have to engage the technical expertise to calculate the things under and what so there's less of that. And there's also less cost of compensation for that, you know, for tax authorities. So that's some of the benefits of bringing the other funds up. But now, So the argument, you know, that also comes in the chair is to say, you bring other more in as instruments to try to fight the problem. But it's very important to look at why the problem is set before you start introducing other mechanisms. What is the problem trend? What is the problem? What are the loopholes? And already we were losing, the country is losing money as we all seen here with regards to the current approach. And bringing advanced tariff agreements in a way, there's a sacrifice of it because you compromise to say, this is an excellent for next year. So there could be an element of cost saving there. They are not necessarily meant to not be saying that. The other point is that the APA itself, it's not a silver bullet. It's not a, quite, it's probably something like that, but it's not a silver bullet because most of these countries that are in the bottom, they experience, they have APA as a measure, but they're still experiencing transfer pricing. It's not like with them having APA make better. So those are some of the compromises that you look into. Also, cost-benefit analysis. If you put a new instrument, it needs more drugs need to be invested in that one to make it work, more people and so on. And so that's so some of the things that we need to look at when we get the advanced equipment. Part of the new report I mentioned to you earlier on, but I think mining and mining extraction expertise actually is a big, I think because that we are a mineral-driven continent, first of all, we have minerals. So you would like to have mining extraction that can be a top edge, and so even global, it is a big area where it's been noted in many countries to stay here. Yes, you know, yeah, the last thing is that the bigger because one also concern production decline in the sector. We discussed a lot of discussion, the money down for one, it's quite a lot of concern that the production decline, and even recently there's been quite a lot of discussion in the media about that. But now when you look at the contribution, it's the mining and especially contribution to tax revenue for past couple of years, you can see it's been in decline. Now the question is this because of tax, meaning that the tax level, the F, you could not go back there, the F, and then the tax income getting from this has been in decline for past couple of years. And the question is this because of budget decline or is it because of the transfer is time? So that's the question I've been to bring there. There has been that. It's been declined for quite some time. You can see the curve there. It's been declined. But of course, when you listen to the tech as well, as I was saying, there was quite a lot of discussion in the mining data. There's a concern from the spec itself about the global decrease in the commodity prices, which is quite a view. You saw last year the price of oil came down from 110 US dollars going down and so on. So even I think the platinum went down quite significantly as well. And other countries have been going down. So they're also concerned about that. And that could affect our profit, that's what investors say. A declining demand for commodities, which really I think has been quite a simple example by China moving approach, their approach shifting from looking being inwards, contribution directly. Now one of the points they raised there, they say they are contributing to affect to the economy indirectly. That needs to be taken account with many of the problems. They are contributing. The strike last year, one of the coastal sites in the strike last year, the 5 months strike, how much access affected, probably directly and indirectly. They also, one of the good things that come out, willing to work with governments to help solve some of the problems. Concerns given to more technology, some of the mining houses are starting technology tools using people in the risk areas. One of the points that was highlighted was also the issue of flexibility of legislation. There's one concern, the legislation and the meaning of clear legislation. What is it clear? What the legislation is saying? Or can you predict what's going to be the next legislation? So there's also concern around that area as well. And also the working relationship there. Now, let's just give a context from both the sector and both from government point of view. But now, what we did there, Chair, we went through we did a survey on mining sector shareholding in South African context to certify. Let's look at mining shareholding in shareholding mining sector in listed companies in the GSE. You know, it comes out, it's quite interesting. Teacher, you know, when you look at the mining house in Desi, 69% of those we serving, which of course we took it from the list of the mining houses, 69% are Saracen controlled. Saracen control meaning the shareholding between entities, more like 80%. So, it's really Saracen controlled. And 18% foreign control, which is 3 out of 4, 19 out of 24 controls, meaning some of your foreign 30%, more than 20% could have one. 18% 3 out of 34 foreign control, so we only had one which was meant for foreign control. Now that's a very interesting. So this is the how it looks in the graph. The orange lines are the I didn't use the actual name of the mining house. Just to avoid, to focus the point on the discussion. To move away, not moving away from discussing the actual name of the company. But I use the mining alphabet to name, denominate as mining one, blah, 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 there. Now, the orange line shows you the entities that are foreign controls. The mining house, out of, there's only four, out of 24, only three of them are foreign controls. Majority of them, you see, is the green line. Are also controlled. Now, of course, this is subject to any interpretation check. But the point I'm trying to bring here is saying, is that control has in any way, is in any way root cause some of the problems that are within the sector? If we are controlling the companies, are we deciding over his behavior? That's the question I'm just putting there. I mean, we are controlling the companies, and these are the issues that are actually mistried to conducting that easier. So I'm saying, are we in any way trying on it? Or we, you know, in the issue of you can't buy the head of fish when we put in your plant. You know, we're just going to leave it happen because if you are looking at benefiting it as the shoulders or executives at the expense of the mass. So that's what I'm trying to bring up there. It is very likely that by the effect of controlling mining houses, because most of these mining houses that I surveyed there are international companies. They have subsidiaries, they have their mother bodies, mother companies as well. That's the point of view there. There's sometimes these multinational companies put pressure on local companies for whatever. So that's just a question to talk about there. Is it any way this particular cost as controlling these entities? That's the point on the saving. There are considered views also on that. Some of the colleagues, some consultants say, is there warrant to review the current reality bill? I didn't look at that detail. Some of that are friends out there. Capital allowance against the liabilities in my industry. So what happens that when you buy machinery as a mining house, you are allowed to cut that whole amount as a part of corruption costs. So some people are pushing that, well, that is the right way of doing it. And the third arrangement is the effective, and well, the type of gym in mining sector, which progress, you know, does it allow as the income increases, the revenue also increases there. There was also economic models used by World Bank and DTC recently to reflect on the effectiveness of tax in the sector, and people are, some of the consultants are questioning that that outcome reflects that the package in mining industry is too lenient compared to other industries and so on. So that's one question. And also the other communities of our colleagues are questioning the outcome if effectiveness as it is, or is it effective, and so on. So those are some of the points that we're raising, Chair. Some of the points of conversation that we highlighted there, it's quite small to see, but I'll just try to say some of them. The implementation of the relations guidelines, that needs to be updated, or that needs to be updated. And I spoke to colleagues in National Association who said the information guideline of the legislation has been put out there. So that process, some of the text there, because in our research, some of the text there, so some of the advice, as I said, some of the information, we spoke some of the advice to the taxpayers who said, no, the guideline itself is not helpful, so it needs to be updated. One other point that was came out in our discussion, we spoke to different agencies, STAR, divergences within this world. And you realize that we are another church, is not a public thing. There's a sense that we are working inside, religions are working inside, which makes it difficult. Sometimes when the staff has a mandate, staff is doing certain things, but at the last, there's a lack of coordination. At the last, you find this sound is consistent. That is being very, very much encouraged. But, and you look at start their different mandate, take their different mandate. But in that their mandate, they try to mitigate some of the problems there. So, is there a room for collaboration from policy level or legislative level and also during the implementation stage? So, our recommendation is our issue that what we build there is infra level, legislative, implementation, and oversight level. And also, the text between the sector, is there a need to review the sector regimes? Are the alternatives for other alternatives, other complement methods are probably that we use to recommend the answers. One of the points, I think one of the reports by the Honorable Chair mentioned earlier on, that they've been mentioned this method, which one of the approaches that needs to be considered. That's what I point to. Are the other methods to be considered to say, to complement the current approach or to, because it's not what you see now. Is there a approach? One of the hanging methods, one of the points out of it is the picking of the community prices, for example. Picking the community price, the market, or the pay to such a price, or whatever. So we need to consider that. What are other alternatives that needs to be considered there? What point, I think, I raised one of colleagues, many colleagues in the center there, is disincentives. Are the disincentives too low? I know one of my colleagues said, are the incentives too low that the prevalence continues to take place? What are the incentives? What are the differences? What are the incentives? Are they too low? That's the question that we should look into as well. And also the practices, what is the process? We talked about this yesterday, there's the oversight of you, there seems to be more work. To ensure that something is in your trust from the legislative point of view. And also the concern of certain information, other things that need to be required and data. And of course, some of these things that we need to do when you look at these options or these issues, we need to look at the problem. We need to look at the problem. But at the same time, there are good technicians out there who get sacrificed that also some of others not doing something. And one other point I want to highlight there, which is one point on the legislation side, is inherent limitations. Sometimes, the fact that we need investment, how much of some of these points are inherent to the investment itself? If you don't have investment, you're not going to have the test, the problem. So how much of it is part of it, how much of it is not part of it? We can have that discussion there. I think there's some of the things I want to highlight there, but it's quite detailed. Chair, I think that's all. So. Thank you very much.
We've really opened to the floor. But I think the co-chair wants to ask something. Can we make that quickly and then we hand over to you? And then what we also wanted to suggest, point is that we have national strategy, TA, journals, and trade industry here. So towards the end, we would like brief responses so that we have a feel for what you think, at least for now, tentatively at least, about the inputs made and the discussion that MPs have intended. So over to you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chairperson. Yes, again, it's just these, perhaps the jargon or specialized phrasing like practice notes. What does it mean to business?
So we explain that thing, and we move on to comments from colleagues.
Thank you, Chair. A practice note, it's... Let's be more guideline. This is quite difficult to put it out. So it's more guideline to text here. This is what they ought to do, or this is what this legislation needs. So, you know, it's put out there. It's not a binding, just guideline. The only just use the guideline.
The time is not your business, but of baby as well. I'd say a practice note means implemented in practice. If I have my own way, I just use the word guideline. The, you know, practice note means something different, at least to me. All right, fine. Over to members. Who wants to say yes? One. Who's next? Two. Three. Well, for a start, you're the order in which you may speak. Four. Anybody else? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to talk on the Chair of Trade and Industry mentioned labour and how transfer pricing affects the distribution. And I just want to talk on if a company declares a lower profit because it's used transfer pricing to say that it's not making as much money as it actually is, then it uses that figure when it engages in collective bargaining, then it results that the workers' wages are much lower than what they should be. And this is not only affects the mining industry, but this affects every industry in South Africa. So fundamentally what we could assume as we sit here today is that our wage bill in South Africa is much lower than it actually should be, and our workers should be paid much more because of transfer pricing. And I want to know what the other departments think about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Look, we appreciate the presentation, but it has a number of things that we should clarify. Firstly, our arguments underscore the fact that transfer pricing is unethical, it's a fair business practice. We must take a moral high ground in the manner in which we speak about it, particularly in the extractive industry, drain the country of resources. And we need to, this is not a communist statement. It's not a socialist statement, it's not some big revolutionary statement. So it's not an anti.
Why is the EFF saying it?
It's actually a very simple thing that they have. It's not a Marxist statement, nothing. It's a bad business. Because all students
that they're losing, stop provoking Khan.
Because Honorable Chef, we must deal with the perceptions that come when we discuss these issues. That this approach is anti-business to try and get a proper business, a party that is ethical. So I want to underscore that because we're passionate about that and the fact that this is not actually very, it's not even new, it's not the revolutionary, nothing. It has to do with us going for an ethical practice within those who are doing business. The emphasis has been in the extractive industry. Now the presentation did not consider Latin American experience. There are people who are dealing with the phenomenon of transfer pricing, actually quite successful. And that's the thing with the intellectual framework of South Africa, that theoretically you always need to compare yourself with the people who have your similar experiences. Latin America, Asia, people who have been mined, who have been colonized, who have gone through the same type of experiences. And Bolivia, Brazil, adopt what is called the fixed method. And which is part of what we have, and that's the argument we want to bring the house on. So I'll speak to that, and I'll make one other point and then conclude. So the OECD has five methods, okay, of dealing with this phenomenon. It's the COP method, cost plus method, resale price method, profit, split method, transactional, net margin method. So there is within the literature what emerges as a fixed method, okay? Which is what we think must be the emphasis, and that's what we must adopt. So if this company, and particularly it must be an approach for extractive industries, okay? By the way, it's not true that I'm hoping that the comrades from Samba will clarify. It's not true that there are only four companies in South Africa. They'll clarify that. Anyway. The fixed method says you force companies to give you the information by law. Okay, you force them to give you the information about the price of the subsidiary company which sold to the manufacturer. Okay, so if the company that is in South Africa is a subsidiary, they must give you the information of the other company as the price that was sold to the manufacturer. And you take that price. You don't consider transportation costs. You don't consider, that's what Brazil, Bolivia, and other countries in Latin America have done. And my experience is more successful than the OECD approach. both the Mbeki letter report in the African Union as well as the presentation have ignored Latin American experience. And that's what we're trying to bring the argument of the House. Or that, that should be the approach. That we tax you on the basis of the price that you sold to the manufacturer. You put mechanisms in place to get that information. So within the OECD method, you will realize that there's already a fair sort of approach, which is the retail price method. But we think that they use it to just test. It's used as a test, number one, but it also considers transportation costs and circumstances and all those things. But the Latin American that got it too. Check the price at which the minerals are being sold to the manufacturer, and we use that. We will recover those trillions of rands. Maybe next time that's what the presentation should also emphasize. You must put those trillions of rands so that we are able to get a proper idea of how much we are. So if you put that $12 billion in rands, you'd realize that the budget runs the country probably for the next 100 years. If the South African budget per year were running at 1.3 trillion rand, $120 billion must translate it into rand. That's how much we are losing the money to finance the country for the next, okay, conservatively, 50 years. Can we resolve a lot of questions there? You can even forgive Uganda, maybe. If that money, you can look at friends that will forgive you for recovering money. Okay, the final thing, Honorable Chairperson, that we want to try is that it's a much more political point. That perhaps, in the immediate, the question of government owning the state, like going and owning a mining company is becoming even more important because, you know, for trade and industry, most of some of the precious metals that you want are not in the market in South Africa to push industrialization on. So you've got to have a company that you own, a mining company in South Africa that you can. You don't have to ask these companies to sell you in order to locally beneficiate, that is to lead local industrial manufacturing and all those things. You can do it yourself. So the logic there is that it's very difficult to imagine how you're going to do local beneficiation when you don't own. So that's one of the things that you might want to, I know that this one might be called the socialist community, but must engage. If we're going to locally beneficiate, we probably want to go in and own these mining companies ourselves. We can debate how we get it. Our view is that you take them without compensation. Politically, you make a political argument, you take them, and it won't be new. It's part of Western civilization, by the way. Communism is the Western civilization method of industrialization. Finally, Honorable Chairman. The final point that I want to make is that to ask, it doesn't matter. We can deliberate around party camps and so on and so forth. But we think a collective approach to save the country's resources is critical. A company that engages in transfer pricing must be seen as a company that does not care about South Africa. It must be seen as a company that does not care about the development of this country, its people, and the ethics and the language with which one approach. And those who seek to combat transfer pricing are the patriots, are the people who are saying we must really make sure that we get our share. We build the roads, we supply. Capital doesn't even build people houses. We build those houses, we give water, and all those things. We must get our share. But that is how deeply wrong, how deeply criminal, how deeply immoral transfer pricing is. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Number three, I think Jefferson, yes, with regards to the comments and recommendations, I'd just like to make a few remarks. I think the report from the EFF was really insightful, but with regards to recommendations, we have serious problems with regards to, of course, suggestion that defending banks should nationalize. Banks have
major role like facilitating the factors in terms of household pricing, but if there's irregularities, there's a prosecuting authority that can address this. I don't think nationalization should be an option. We did a fundamental on that, and it's a flawed ideology that's failed in many countries. And also the extension of state ownership that you've mentioned there, and the control of strategic mineral resources. We know that the mining industry is a very complex industry. We have mining experts here, but very low profit margins. We see very difficult to manage. And then we have proposal to terms of taxation on the gross price, without considering deductible costs. That would be an instant death to the mining sector. Those are the issues that is of major concern, and I'm not quite sure if these are such grounds of pricing or a fraud ideology in my perception. But in this way, Chairperson, I think further investigation, like you've done today, together with the budget office, was very, very, very useful. And thank you very much, Dr. Sani, for that presentation. The impact of price, transfer pricing cannot be underestimated. I think there's a lot of work to be done. So, by far, I think SARS has put in a tremendous effort of doing the best purpose course, but also the Labor Tax Commission recommendation should be very useful if you will tell me whether you agree with me on that or not, and if we can have the details of those recommendations to this very important issue. And then also perhaps a suggestion whether, because there's so many multinationals involved and listed on the JSE, whether we should not engage with the JSE also with regard to their recommendation. I know they also have a unit that looks into this sort of transfer pricing. I think it's also a bit undercapacitated, but we can also engage with them if that could be a useful nod. And then also, Professor, with regard to the rules of transfer pricing, more details with regard to that would be nice. And then all the advanced pricing agreements, it seems that that seems to be the solution, how that should structure, not to have a negative impact at the checkers and the honorable subjects indicated, not to harm business in that sense, and considering the very important contribution of the money and other sectors on making tools for this issue. Thank you. I think that concludes my questions. Thank you.
Andy. Oh, is it Dave? Sorry, is it Andy number five? Sorry.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me start by welcoming the work done by the TPO. I think it's very helpful in terms of giving guidance to the affected communities on this very important aspect. Chair, I'm going to focus mainly on what I think should be our way forward. Because the rest of the matter is that besides the report from the PDO, we have received, as you correctly indicated at the beginning, we have received some input from other players. And I think it will only be fair if those inputs are considered as a collective. But also it will only be fair if a clear determination is made as to is there any need of us considering further inputs. Now, my simple suggestion is that we should assign the following committees, chairpersons, working together with the committee secretaries to firstly collate whatever input has been received and collapse it into the report of the joint committee. But at the same time, look at the possibility of considering further inputs from other stakeholders who might feel that they were not maybe given an opportunity at Parliament, to make further inputs. So as we make a determination as a joint committee, we are not accused of not having considered inputs from other role players. By other role players here, I mean National Treasury, I mean there are so many people that I think should come on board for us to bring this matter to its logical conclusion. But also, in the process, I will add the persons working together with the committee secretary must also consider a workshop for members on this concept. Because, listening to the submission of ESL, I am tempted to conclude that we need a workshop. Because even after the matter is properly explained by the budget office, and I know even in the presentation made to the committee or trade leader. This matter of transfer pricing, there was a clear attempt to kill 5 members. Now, if still 5 members arguing that, even if it's said to them, transfer pricing is a price at which entities within multi national enterprise transfer to each other to transfer goods for the transfer of goods and services. And people say this must be outlawed. That means these transactions must be stopped. I mean, either they would have been understanding. I don't know which academic qualifications the honorable member have. But if it says transfer pricing is the price that determines to transfer between a multinational company and its subsidiaries, why should you argue that it must be outlawed? It doesn't make sense to me. And I think that if you have all sharp here and fair, why don't we close the gap in terms of how to legislate this practice? Because our biggest problem here is the abuse of the practice. Our biggest problem here is mispricing. It's not transfer pricing. So why do we keep on arguing for it to be to be outlawed? But to me, it's like I'm saying, stop transacting. Because we can't, I mean, put necessary laws to make sure that you transact appropriately, you price appropriately as you transact. And that to me is like killing, I mean, economic activity that is needed to grow our economy. So I would argue that in your consideration, but also it's also confusing because in the position of the GF, it's contradictory and confusing. You want to go on to say, transaction between holding companies and its subsidiaries must be pricing of these transactions must be properly monitored and properly regulated. But previously you said this practice must be outlawed. To me it sounds very contradictory. Now, Chair, I think in your consideration of this way suggested way forward, make a point that you also look into how to ensure that members are properly workshopped on this important concept. Because you might be thinking that we are all on the same wavelength, unfortunately. And I'm not sure, Chair, but anyway, this is something that will emerge as we discuss the input of other stakeholders. If the work that has been presented by the EFMS, I think an extra man to go through it, is really, I mean, something that's originating from them. Or are you trying to speak on behalf of other people who are not members of parliament? I'm not sure. Because, I mean, the constitutionalization of submission by individual members doesn't correspond to some of the submissions that are coming out of their own documents. So that's why I'm saying, please, Chairperson, through working together with the committee presidents, will you please collapse all these inputs and get one product that you can start looking at as members of respective committees, so as we guide this august institution called Parliament. Thank you very much.
Number 5.
You see, the advantage of being a member of a governing party is that you carry the responsibility to govern the country, therefore you do not have the luxury to play gimmicks or play to the gallery. You provide solutions that will make everybody happy, you see. So it's not about an ideological outlook of a particular party, it's about governance. That's the difficulty of being a governing party. So I'll avoid a situation where I will want to engage more on whether somebody is more qualified to speak on an issue or not, but to get lasting solutions to a problem. That's why when I made input yesterday, I quoted Madiba when he showed the importance of consultation in making policy and understanding that policy will not be fundamentally correct, it will be put to test, and it will be given an opportunity to function if it does not be changed. That's why the UC government will always consider things at all costs. It will not say whether it's the Communist Manifesto, read the Socialist View, in the National Democratic, it will always get one way. I hope you capture my prelude, because it's fundamental in terms of engaging one with it. It's a very complex matter. It does not have immediate answers. And I'll make an example why I say that. Had we not used colonization of special types, we would have had a flicker of market, because we have requisite skills where people can compete and have jobs and prosper without any hindrance. So in a situation where there was colonization of special type and the majority were subjected to poverty and low skills, you have to come with a different system altogether to address those challenges. And you should be of the view of the setback. When you try to bring transformation, there's always unintended consequences. For instance, if you say black economic empowerment, those who benefited, people would say, no, why should we all be at the same level playing field? There are those who feel disadvantaged. So there's competing demand that you need to satisfy at all times. So it's a very complex matter altogether. And I'll make an example of what I'm talking about. We are about to look into the 23 billion injection that we're going to make for ECHO. There are those who believe there should be equitable share, and those who believe that it should actually, a generation distribution should be planned. So you have to look at it from a level of providing a solution as government, because we're not only playing a regulatory role. If we were only playing a regulatory role, we couldn't have a problem we had with African Bank. So at some point, they need to be state intervention. Because even if, you see, you raise a very important question. You spoke about the thick method, correct? Obviously, you've got fast method, you wanted to look at the other method. It doesn't suggest that the other method will work in South Africa. Let me make an example of what I'm talking about. If you need going to charge companies for the prices of the commodities they produce from a manufacturing price, you need to be extracted. Do we have the capacity to do that? Have you tested that? Can you give us an example of countries being able to sit down? Look at when we deal with the competition, when there's collusion. Do you know how much money the Competition Commission says just to investigate and to follow people who are not following the law to the letter? And if it makes personal sense, you can do it, but if it was going to result in loss, sometimes you let it go. Now, we take it for granted that when business transact, they are honest, they follow the law, and we know sometimes they don't. Hence, you know, it's very important to remind business of its role. Hence, the suggestion that the PEO is making, that let's look at our legislative framework. Let's look at the digital migration to a situation where we can check every transaction as it happens and be able to record that there isn't some illicit activity that takes place. On the question of morality, we cannot act against. You see, because of the fact that we have poverty, that's why we agree. It's not a question of it's who says it. It's a fundamental question that can be a challenge to any nation. If there is poverty, government, I think that government must be able to regulate in the benefit of the poor. And that's what we do. We're a pro-poor government. That's what we do. So I don't do that. Now here's a suggestion that has been put in place. It says, let's re-engage. There's a suggestion that is agreed upon. We need to look at the policies that must be implemented moving forward with the inclusion of the sector itself. Honorable Lord makes a suggestion. Says that there's a lot of listed companies in the JSC to remind, inviting them for input. That I will leave to the chair. Because one of the most important things is to be inclusive when you make a decision, even if the decision is going to come out different, is to make sure that you will have listened to different opinions, you will have tested the ideas, and you know that the solution that you want to come will be the best at the time. So I will, in a way, flow with it, so that we consider other views. But it doesn't change the fundamental moral question of the role. And that's why you actually love, you don't actually oppress business. You lobby business. You show them the moral need to support government in the Netherlands. Because they don't also benefit if they support. You know, I remember one leader of the youth league who was like, the poor will eat the cheese in your fridge if you don't attend to their problems. You see, they will take it. So we don't want a situation where the poor just act in a particular hand. You see, particularly, it doesn't mean that people must not be given an opportunity to do business as long as that is done in a legal manner, in a moral manner, and we all agree. Alright? And that's my opinion so far. The rest, let's leave them outside in terms of the ideological debate, what we should, what's the best for now. But I understand you, because I'm still young. And you don't care it. Yeah, no, I understand. Sometimes I understand. Sometimes, you know. Oh, come on. You want me to respond to you, sir? I'm laughing. I'm just playing with them. So I spoke certain by each other. Possible. I don't know. But you do get it. So, you know, Chair, if it was possible, I was going to ask the president to give a post to be a minister of trade and industry. And listen to all these missions and go into the Golan Gas. And you see what? By the time you come back, you will have combed his hair, you will have been wearing a tie, you will speak a different language, I think.
Okay, who's next?
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you to the PPO for a very helpful document. It is, you know, it's an eye-opener. And I think we'll make great use of it. You know, I just want to make one small check as my favorite request, that labor should be work very closely with the Department of Minerals and Energy. And I'll tell you why I'm saying this. We were doing a course with Professor Churro in the last term on a political economy. And he told us that there was a conference on the mining industry where they actually said that, yes, they have gone very small, but they think they still make a very huge contribution indirectly in the economy. And you see, the long mining strike has shown us that mining is important to the growth of our economy. But while we were listening to that, I had something at the back of my mind. That I agree that they are making a lot of contribution to the economy. As you know, being a political animal that I am, I was just thinking of how much poverty do they contribute to the poverty situation. Because I would like to share with them that if our friends, this office, could look at making a research on how much the legal balance in mining contribute to the poverty situation in our country. Also the retrenchment, also because you know my grandfathers and my father were miners, I'm very poor. And you know those things. I would like us to have something quite tangible so that we can weigh the gains against the benefits. Thank you.
Pongani, and I'm afraid I don't know your name. I've written with the bank.
Thank you very much, everyone. No, I also want to join the members who are welcoming the presentation from the budget office. It is helping. It's adding more value to the discussion. And it's very informative. And in entering the debate, I want to assure other honorable members that by this debate today, presided by three chairpersons from different committees, it is providing a moral high ground for the debate in the Republic of South Africa. And the consensus that I'm receiving on broadening the debate, for me, is entrenching that moral ground of the debate, which it does not necessarily discuss other contributions that have been made by members today. But I want us to follow the process that is already suggested, that we agree that the process must go on, and we agree that all the stakeholders that are in this particular process should be called to Parliament and to enhance the debate itself, especially on the question of looking at the loophole, the legislative loopholes, because the Parliament Committee is explaining the legislative loopholes in relation to the reports that are conflicting on outflows and so on. So there are many reports that are outside. One of them is the question of the global financial report. The other one is the science report, which do not talk to that. And that's the problem. So we must get our own numbers as the Republic of South Africa and its intent. We know that there is a report tomorrow that is presented in the Pan-African Parliament. And those will impact also in the discussion because that's an African forum. Fundamentally for me, it took, especially on the question of whether the voluntary and obligatory is not a way to look at whether it's saving South Africa today or it's not. So I want to suggest that let's follow the process, let's agree that the process has started, three page chapters are here, let's broaden the debate and look at the legislative matters that affect the discussion. But what is fundamental is to say to Honorable Zuzi, you must not be afraid. We are gaining a moral high ground for this debate as we are studying it today. Thank you very much.
Dean.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just for honourable members that don't know from trade and industries, I'd like to speak from a trade and industries perspective. I think it's very important that we always keep in mind that the average worker in the mining industry earns more than the average worker in the manufacturing industry. And it is clearly an industry that has shed many jobs over the last few years. And it's clearly an industry that needs to be protected and built back up to where it was. But that can't be done in a hostile environment that is threatening speaks of nationalizing industries without compensation and so forth. So the tone and discussion of joint meetings like this is particularly important so that the correct message is sent out not just to the mining industry but to the manufacturing industry and so forth. And I think Minister Davey said something very important yesterday. In fact, he said two things which were important yesterday. One was regarding the way in which the department had done the clarification on the e-code, and he used the terminology that that maybe the department had used a sledgehammer to sort of fly. And he also admitted that communication around that particular issue had been quite poor and had resulted in a lot of uncertainty in the market. And I think those are two important points that we need to take cognizance of when we're dealing with this issue. Communication is very, very important, and the element of trust is built with industries. Because I don't think that there's a South African that doesn't agree that everyone from the president to the man on the street, the leaders of minority parties, and together must pay their fair share. We don't want tax avoidance. It's not good for this country, and it is not good for the economy. But when we are having a discussion like this, we also can't allow discussions as sober as this, and I think it's been a very sober discussion, to be hijacked by political parties or interest groups that want to grandstand because we have journalists in the gallery. That doesn't help the discourse or the conversation or direction of where we are going. And I think that the platform that's been created here is excellent, and I think that the presentations from the budget office are probably one of the most informative presentations on this particular issue that we've seen to that chairperson. And so I think that it's an offer that maybe needs to be certainly used more by our committee because there are some very good points that are brought across. So with that, I'll conclude my remark. Thank you.
I should clarify, and others who are here, other committees, that Dumasani belongs primarily to the Finance and Appropriations Committee. Only, and only once it's done with our two committees, I hope the chairs are listening here, is he available, as both Paul Mashatile and myself, and the two chairs from the NTOP, sign off for any work, Mohammed, that you do for any other committee, right? And it's set out in the law, in the new year, presumably, I haven't seen you before,
yes.
So then the money goes back. I will not allow any question, but the interest of a Democrat, do not believe it, you can't comment.
Just a question of clarity. Can we then nationalize him? That's the one form of nationalization I went for.
No.
Thank you.
Because this is getting too far now.
All right.
Anybody else before the chair come in? No. Oh, yes.
Sorry, Chair, I think I missed one point during my submission. The committee that I think should be considered. It's finance, trade and industry, mineral resources, and economic development, plus the excellence committee there. The rest of the matter is that there are more committees that can be included on this list. But I think for me to be practical, because you also know how difficult it is to get up to get the three or the four. So if you open it up and bring other committees, you must end up calling your own parliament. So my suggestion is that let's stick to those four, but we are in the way for parliament. We definitely put political party processes, current processes, and through parliamentary processes, we'll find a way of soliciting inputs for other affected, or committees that we think are affected. But at the same time, this exercise, I'm suggesting that we consider those four committees.
Yeah, that's a very useful the thing I wanted to speak to Chair. But very quickly again, two points. I really want to emphasize that the example that we are putting on the table is Latin America for experiences that have used the system effort that have worked. I want to also persuade the Dumasani team to consider it can be useful actually in everything to look at all the time what Latin America is doing. The letter of the S was written with Latin America in mind because they decolonized for us in the continent. Their experiences are really useful, and in this case I think that's it. Once you undergo that very critical that Latin America is a very useful example. And then the point again is not to scare business away. That's why I started that this statement, this effort is not communism. We're not asking Honorable Chairman, I hope you're going to get my the plan. We're not asking for communism. We're not asking for socialism.
Why?
Why?
Were you elected on that
mandate? No way!
You are nothing to be, you claim.
We wouldn't ask for communism from the ANC. Maybe I didn't want to put it that way. You get what I mean? I'm not asking the DA to accept communism. I'm not asking other people. I'm saying this actually is above. We can find a common interest in making sure.
But you made
that. No, because and I want to add one more thing, including the claim for both minerals and energy, as well as the trade and industry. You know, nationalization doesn't mean, it's not an anti-business model when it comes to extractive industries, rather than what you're saying. It's not an anti, doesn't mean you want to pay politicians when they come in. It shouldn't be like that. But what it gives you, by the way, imagine it this way, if those companies, large national companies, were state-owned, we wouldn't be having this because our capital wouldn't be leaving. It wouldn't be leaving the country. We would be benefiting. Those profits would be in South Africa. And the question of local beneficiation, that is, by the way, the jobs that are being lost in mining on the basis of mechanization. Some of those decisions we would be making ourselves. So nationalization shouldn't scare you. It's not actually an anti-business. It's just a strategic hold to develop your own country. You know, you get a proletariat, a patriotic capitalist, or you do it yourself. Now, the patriotic capitalist is nowhere to be found for the last 21 years. Not there. So, another model
that we want to emphasize is state ownership. What state ownership guarantees is that the capitalists can't just take decisions on their own on the basis of what they think. We will put policy positions that we are going to locally beneficiate, but also our capital wouldn't be leaving. Half those companies don't even spend that money within this economy. It doesn't even circulate within this economy. So both economically, business, and morally, that is what we're dealing with here. That's the phenomenon. We're not concerned here. What we're trying to do, the urgency of the question is, you've got trillions of rands that are leaving the country.
And you said you've covered them. You've covered those issues. But you think we should also be cautious about but you said all those things. Now everybody else is going to emphasize, which means repeat exactly the same point. Right? Emphasize means something different. But nevertheless, let's agree to disagree. Right? What I want to say though, from the chairs of our judgment facility, and one of the questions we need to ask ourselves is, what are the parameters? What is the framework within which we're going to deal with these issues? Because some of the issues we are raising, we as the minority party may agree with, but we're not so sure how relevant it is to the transfer pricing from the institution. But there's one more hand, and then the chair was coming. Okay, you have a right to speak. So there's the commonly EFF there.
Well, it's all right. But this is unfair, Chairperson, that as a member of parliament, I'm told that I just want to make money. I think
fair about it.
No,
it's a view, but let's hear you.
No, the word that I want to make known. I'm not a parliamentarian.
This is like work from time. It will be rumors, it will be boisterous. But our standards of the EFF, I'm asking you, meaning very well.
So you must have read the power of the religious conscience to be part of the process. But
let's have a look at the issues, right? Let's look at the content of what you're saying. Thank you.
Now, Chair, I just want to emphasize on one point. For the fact that if I know you as a former member of the Communist Party, and you were very instrumental in drafting the constitution of the Communist Party at the time. And I know you very, very well that you're very vocal against such issues that LDFF were raising today. And having said that,
nevertheless,
I'm also glad that the chairperson of Mineral Resources, Comrade Zephyr Zippo, about his background too, as a former leader of COSATU, we do share very same sentiments as EFF. So this, I'm not launching them, I'm just taking the committee through, this joint committee. Even a Comrade Park has background too, it's okay. So I'm saying there's only one thing that ANC did a good job, just to give you comrades this key, portfolio committees to share. Take this anti-cognizance that what the EFF have put forward, it must talk to your soul because of the country. Thank you, Chair.
Look, we're coming in. Colleagues, we see through you. Yeah, indeed, this is appropriating the apartheid system, right? And divide the communists from the national democrats, right? But he needs to be reminded that the national democratic method and approach is based on historical materialism. Whatever people say, that's where it ends from. And I'm sad to say that you were in the Communist Party, and you misunderstood what I said completely. Presumably you voted for me on the Central Committee, because I know what percentage of votes I got. So this is what you delivered. But nevertheless, you are free to say that. I disagree with you. And what I want to say, colleagues, is that I think we've covered all your senses. You and then we must ask the chairs to comment.
Just an add-on to the question. I want you to say your changes should not be within the Tax Administration Act, where tax administrators will play a major role in assessing the scores of transfer price.
Well, then I think the Chair from Minerals and Energy and Trade Industry, and then I might have something to say.
No. Thank you, my Chair. And Honorable Magson, let me appreciate that you still regard me as your comrade. At least, maybe that's the first common area that we must agree. The only thing, you missed that one part, to say thanks to the ANC and the Communist Party to make you who you are, not just. So that's one great thing, is that we must appreciate what has been given to us. I always appreciate from my, what do you call it now, grade one teacher, that I am what I am because of what she put into me that I am today. So, from primary school. But the second thing, honorable girls, I'm not sure whether really, the only one thing that I hate is to distort someone and make a point so that I seem to be triumphing. And if I misquote you, I misunderstood you. Look, any ideology that does not adapt to the material conditions that prevail on that moment, then surely it is shall. Or it is not an ideology at all. But we can take that discussion on another day. So I don't want sometimes when people come here, because there is a very bad tendency, Parliament will allow. And present that we are here, because we just left and prayed and find ourselves here. Surely we have political backgrounds, all of us. And I don't think, if I'm a liberal, I must fear that, because the impression that we created that it's bad to be something else in other corner and it's good. Because even if you don't mention the other side, an impression that lifted that this one can't mention. So whether it's communist, whether it's capitalism, whatever, as long as it cannot attach to the prevailing material conditions, then it is doomed to die. In fact, one can argue, say, those who are the living communists, in particular, give a moment, they had to adapt to prevailing conditions. But if we're in a political class, we're going to deal with that issue. And say, even in his own experience, he knew that if he forced what he wanted to do, he would not have achieved a minimum of what he was going to do, because there was resistance in the first place. So I don't think we should create an impression in South Africa that really there is someone who is going to give in on everything. In fact, access to privilege, by its very nature, will lead to resistance. So sometimes there is this tendency that, I don't even mean, and I made this example one day, I said, all of us here are sitting here, let's face the reality. But it's not bad anyway. But all of us here, when you are supposed to pay tax, you try by all means to do everything possible that you get as much from the tax rather than to give as much to tax. So, in the process, therefore, if after this is there, if you're going to extract from someone, surely you can't expect that it's going to be voluntarily given in. But how we do it remains the most critical issue. So I'm just saying, we should be, and I agree with everyone, the bigger problem is when, because sometimes I always say we may talk a bit apart each other. I don't think for me really the origins of when this debate that head or whatever. I'm not saying there's someone who says so. The prevailing spirit is that let's recognize there is a challenge in front of us. And once we move from that premise, it's the Nigerians then whose clever or bad ideas came from. We can take that debate in another forum. But in reality, there is. And what I think to me is even the message, even to those who seek to justify the prevailing status quo, they acknowledge that there is work that is being done. What I think in the world that dog is being missed, and I want to add to this point, I know some honorable members try to do, is that it cannot miss, it may, if in terms of crisis, that's where my belief, my view on this. If in terms of crisis might become legal, might become a good terminology, but if it does not giving a historical background on the discussion, then we will miss even what would be seen to be good. So I'm saying the history of South Africa will become unique at times to a certain degree. Even in the effort that we were almost the last at the tip of the South to see liberation, there were its own consequences. So we will need to add to one another. I'd like to suggest a few issues here, which I think also they emanate from the discussions here, and also deal with the separation of what is the discussion. First, is what should constitute the gist of the work that has to be done. And then it what then should be the process to be followed. We may like you say saying who then takes charge in moving the process forward. The first issue I think Honorable Colleague there is that I may agree, but I don't think secretary for me they don't even have to be given mandate of committee. The chairperson must do the work and they know who to utilize in the process. Which in my view they don't I don't think the committees will feel you must be resourced because power, I always believe power is not easy to share. So I'm not inquiring my secretary or my committee. I decide what to do. So this should happen as the chair is opposed to the mandate given to him. But I think what he can leave in this process is that as the chair are working on that work, consideration, because this is where I think it's a honorable topic as well. What could be very dangerous is to talk about people without them being part of what they're dealing with. I would want to see an environment where those people that they continuously get mentioned, they get an opportunity also to be engaged. And in this case, I think as well, they are very skeptical to be those that are in the JSA and so forth. They've got bodies that represent the best. We should then say, as the chairperson, we must do everything possible to also include those who are stakeholders in the current debate, particularly even those that are being, I don't want to say that are being accused, but that are being offered to be practicing this kind of an exercise. So when they come back, they don't say that we're never given an opportunity. There has to be an engagement that is taking place between us and them. But also linked to that, I think we must also agree, part of that work I was going to say, now I've never agreed with privatization, especially when it's now very wrong. I always, even with three countries. Now this privatization of entities of colouring, I don't think it's correct. But we can give it at a later stage. Because now you can't give the money because you must first ask from someone and ask and I give the money. As long as people have been made available at the disposal of the committee, it actually means they are an available resource to the committee. So I was going to say, as chairperson works, you must work with the budget office. Part of the work of the budget office is to assist the chairpersons to collate the all information, whether it's from SARS, whether it's from the one that was presented by the industry, because we have had sessions also with stakeholders, including the employers, the mining industry, the issues that they trade, you know, they raise those issues also. And then say, can we look at what are those common issues that are coming up for processing people? So that, because if you give it to chairperson, I can tell you, expect postponement after postponement, because we will be planning the next committee meeting next week. And I agree with Honorable Van Rooyen, coordinating four committees is never an easy task. But I'm going to say part of that now is that let the chairpersons, when they meet, set up a process, wish myself, milestone, or landmark to say, at this time, these are the issues that they may then have to be taken back to the respective committees for them to make an observation and see whether there are other recommendations to be made. But there's only one thing I think is that it's better to be patient with the process. It may need to be hurried, but we should not do a process that will be hurried in such a way that we may have contacts later on when they've taken the strike, and not the will not just strike. So I think in that view, we should then be able. Only at that point where we are able to say, in the comparison of issues, here are the sticky points. I do want to get into the discussion now. Here are the sticky points. Because, for example, there are issues that may relate to taxation, there are issues that may relate to trade policy, there are issues that may relate, I don't want to define this thing, whether it's that behavior or what, but there are issues that may relate to tax evasion, not just tax per se, but tax evasion issues that may relate to extraction processes, whether in the mining industry and so forth. So I think on that, let's also look at what are the, it may also tell what are the broader implications. There are strong arguments, and we still want to debate and share my own views. For example, we did a good comparison to say the mining industry, mine workers are earning far better than workers in the manufacturing industry. Have you understood the form of trade? Because the reality is that there is a huge, in the manufacturing industry, high levels of capitalization are immeasurable. It depends on you measure the same thing. But even money is very major, is a major contributor in the economy. Why would you have a major contributor in the economy that will now be less? But the reality is not a comparison of salaries. It's a comparison of the actual value of what they have and what they don't get. So I think for me that issue remains critical in the scheme of things. We may then have to revisit whether also I think that process must also tell us, do we actually need new legislation? Do we actually need to have legislation? Or do we actually need, I think which is what said the industry was trying to say also in March, do we actually need to have a series of operations? Which will also take you to the Economic Development Committee, which amongst other things include what becomes the role. If we give them the possibility that it will be a matter also of unfair trade competition. So when that question is done, it will tell us we need which one that requires to be considered among others. So I think from the in that regard, it will then begin to set up the process. In some arguments, there's an argument that salary incapacitation is it only the problem. We can deal with the other issues, which I think for me, I think we shouldn't run away from. We've got all of us, we've got our own way. I don't want to, no one here came out without coming to the middle of his or her political party. So I wouldn't want that. As long as we understand that our responsibility is to ensure the common good of the country. And that responsibility finds us to have. So in one way or the other, we have to find ways where we can be able to convert. We may not provide solutions for the first time. Sometimes the tribal intervention might be the issue that prevails. But if we look for a hammer, that is a hammer once and for all, it may not enter. So those options for me can only emerge when we have taken the process through and then say, this is what is being recommended, these are the implications, these are the common areas that we think they don't even need an argument because there is common consensus on what has to be done. Even not the presentation that we made previous. So that's what, for now, I wanted to intervene on.
Thank you very much, Jay. I certainly would concur with my colleague and chairperson of Mineral Resources. There are just a couple of things one would want to add, and perhaps like him, I would like to welcome the presentation by the Parliamentary Budget Office. Now, there are just a few things that it worried me when I saw that slide about the majority of mines and extractive industry, it's all foreign owned. I wanted to just ask you if you had considered the budget office itself, you know, the smaller extraction LTECs, which is small, and I mean, we know that the JSE's got about 449, but did you take LTEC into account? The other issue is that when you look at the value of the JSE listed companies, it's far greater while the BEE ownership is less than 26%. A point I raised right at the beginning, the 26%, which we regard as a conflict of alignment between the two. And this is what we are both trying to work towards. But I want to go further than that. You spoke about foreign ownership, as it were. What worries me is where the price is actually conducted. Our whole argument and position has been that what is made here, if you exploit the mining or mineral wealth here, just as happens in Australia and Canada, we should consider where the primary listing is. And if you don't get that, where is the marketing office? Because it's because of these different arrangements of where the domicilium is when you get this challenge. And Australia itself has put its foot down in this regard. Now, what do we do about that? Certainly from our position, we're saying that in the first instance, South African-owned producers of mining companies, the goods, the services, should be listed and domiciled right here in our own country. That's the first thing we're wanting to get seriously considered here. And I mean, you know, for example, Anglo-American and the others, you can have your secondary listings outside the country. But when you spoke of expenditure, it certainly rang a bell. Because you see, it's not just what you and I may regard as a service. It's the global term of consultancy services, which is a huge amount that goes out of the country, legitimately. Our concern is, can we bring this back here? Can we bring this back here and have the marketing done in our own country, South Africa, so that these funds remain here? The other issue is certainly the journey. We never expected to come to transfer pricing, and it was quite a wake-up call. We kept on talking about the developmental pricing, going back to admin price costings and negative impact of admin prices. And we started there with an extractive industry iron ore and its relationship to steel. And these two industries, you know, the sector, the mining sector, the extractive sector, and manufacturing have an incredibly close relationship, especially when it comes to the multiplier effect, the higher value chain, and manufacturing. And, you know, I did smile when I heard the stats coming from our own committee, Honourable McPherson listing a couple. I know one thing I learned getting a degree in stats, that you can tell any story with stats. Any story you want. You give me the stats, I'll give you the story I want to tell you. That's the first thing I learned. It doesn't mean to say they are invalid, those figures. They're valid. But what comprises it, as my fellow chair was saying, what actually comprises that figure? And we have found in manufacturing, as many noted, we have a lot of casual there are very few skills. Some of the main companies here only woke up to skills upgrading and the like when they realized, by the way, people have reached retirement age who were doing this for 30 years. So when we called for it 20 years ago, they were still going to put it in. These people were only 35 and 40 and 45 years old. 20 years later, how old are they? 50. And there was no program in between. So we have got this huge gap to fill, and hence you have this distortion in wages per se. But I've never believed in comparing ourselves with the lowest common denominator when it comes to wages and the like. The other thing that was referred to here, I think, by Nicholas and Honourable Perry, is the Global Finance Integrity Report. You know, South Africa alone in 2012 lost nearly $30 billion. Now, we all know how the exchange value for the dollar in 2012 has changed to 2015. So, I don't know what we're losing now. Is it nearly $50 billion or what? Now, I don't believe there is one member of the private sector chair that one can. I don't believe it. I really don't. Because by keeping it here, you're able to grow the economy. Anyone in the private sector will agree with you. And with government, we do want to grow the economy. But you're going about it the wrong way if we condone what is happening here. And as I said, the tragedy is that half of it is legal, as we sit here. And our appeal from trade and industry, look at the negative impact that we are getting here. We can't afford to hemorrhage out billions of dollars. It is not simply a social and a moral issue and a poverty issue. It is an economic opportunity loss issue. So if we just want to get away from morality, poverty is an economic opportunity you are losing out every time you agreed to transfer pricing. So we must tackle this. And you know, Chair, what I really appreciated what you were able to do today is you brought in our fellow colleagues from the NCOP. And this took me back to 15 years ago when I was in a province and I came from Gauteng. and I'd be invited here to the NA. So would the NCOP be sitting here. And then we seem to become more and more islands. We began to separate, each perhaps intent on developing a mini legislative empire. We are one house, we're one parliament, simply two houses. And the fact that you were able to bring us together and the commitment, I know from trade and industry, we're very pleased that the journey since 2013 is leading to this kind of engagement, because we believe that working together like this, we can transform the economy, and we can do it both in the public but also the private sector. That is what I really appreciate. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Bongi Fabs. Now, I would like to say a lot of things, but we're running out of time. Maybe what I could do at the end is try to see if I can summon to my aid some sort of summary that the two chairs can add and see, and members can add. So what I suggest is, given that we went to start at 9, the trade and industry had a meeting. We've limited our time for the 1 hour, 9 to 10. So it's now 20 past. Now, the aim of the meeting today, as has been explained by several speakers, is not to come to any conclusions. It's to get a feel for the conceptual, policy, ideological, and other issues. And we will proceed from now in a much more focused, directed way. So keep you on dealing with you. You don't have to answer all these questions, because as Ed and others are saying, you're going to pull all these reports together into one. And there you will answer questions. You're going to be tabulated with questions. So I suggest we give you about 10 minutes. That takes us 12:30. Then we give 5 minutes each to the departments here. So it's SARS, National Treasury, and then also SARS, especially 5 minutes. And then Lindell's video here, as you went to be, and trade and industry. And then there's about 10 minutes left to see whether we can arrive at consensus. But if we start at 10, it doesn't finish at 1, we can spill over a few minutes. Over to you, 10 minutes.
Chair, we don't need 10 minutes. The only point we want to make is we have looked at Latin America, and the issue, the terminology called PEG comes from the Brazilian experience. So that'll be part of the examination. Thank
you. Just on the paper there, Chair, we did look at the latex as Rajan's thing, and or either the DEE presentation, but if there's any work that we can do, that's fine. I think most of the comments we welcome from the honourable member, and we continue to engage in the study report on the whole work that we did, which will make it available to the all committees. So, thank
you.
Chair, thank you very much.
Chair, yeah,
the approach for us in Treasury, we welcome this discussion that's been convened, and we particularly welcome that it's been coordinated between the three committees. I think because largely this is not this is a sort of a multinational company specific issue, and it's not restricted to any one particular sector, be it mining or manufacturing. I think we have no doubt, too, that whilst I suspect a lot of money did flow out of South Africa illegally, and especially in the run up to 94, and something we probably never know, I think the problem we're isolating now is a different one, which is transfer mispricing. And I think from this what's been said, the point is that for a lot of major companies, they've got teams of lawyers, this is done legally within the law, and they're able to exploit differences in the law or difference in tax legislation. It's not very dissimilar when you look at the financial sector and you try and regulate it, that when you have two countries with different rates, people go somehow in between. So that gets me to the second point, which is that that this is a complex issue. And it is being taken up internationally. And even us as South Africans, no one country can solve this problem, and particularly not a small one like South Africa. And that's why I think G20 leaders have for the last few years been quite focused on this issue. And I think that given the complexity, the minister has referred this matter to the Davis Tax Committee, and they have reduced their initial sort of paper on possibly looking at some of the action steps that have been identified and how we take that forward. And of course, we may add on additional steps if we want, but those are the issues. I just want to make one point. I think the issue of domicile is not a simple one. Certainly in the training we deal with it through exchange control applications, but you begin to realize the issue of domicile, place of management. We've taken an approach of dual-listed. I'm not sure that we are a strong enough country to really insist, for example, that primary listing for every mining company. The problem is if you want capital from outside, which is what we're dependent on, because we don't save as South Africa, so we're dependent on foreign flows. And for as long as we are dependent on foreign flows from the outside, we have to accept that you know those who come with funds from overseas do have a power over us that we do need to understand how we're going to engage and challenge with it. Excluding that may be obviously harmful to the economy, but it's something that we need to look at. So I think I'll just end on that point. I'm just saying all these issues are very complex, and I think the approach of just banning transfer pricing or whatever is not really going to solve the problem. It will have other economic impacts. And I think in bringing the debate forward, it's at least bringing the discussion forward, I think, so that all South Africans can look at this and perhaps figure out the best way forward, taking into account what's happening internationally. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think at the outset we must acknowledge that when base erosion and profit shifting, then it is a problem. And I think the numbers from our transfer pricing investigations from the SARS point of view proves that. And we've, I think, uncovered more than 5 billion during the last few years in our investigations. And that's why, when it's not a South African problem, as Momo pointed out, it's an international problem. That's why the world has come together with this BEPS initiative to see how we can relook the rules. These rules were devised almost 100 years ago, and it might have worked in those years with good intentions to avoid double taxation. But the problem is it is being exploited today, and we have a situation now that we have situations of double non-taxation at the end of the day. The one thing that I think that we must just have spare in mind that in the end, I think we should try and find that, I think is also one of the aims of the BEPS project, that we try and find a balanced outcome at the end of the day. On the one hand, we still don't want double taxation, but we also don't want double non-taxation. We want taxpayers to pay the rightful amount of tax in this jurisdiction where they're operating. On the other hand, we want to give enough certainty and predictability for business and investors to come and invest in your country. So I think one of the broad thinkings of the BEPS initiative is to see that you align the taxation with where the economic value is ultimately created, and that you can try and get that principle correct. I think, Chairs, this has been a very valuable process. I think a good process. I think a lot of points have been made today that we will certainly take note of. I think it's a good thing to, at certain stages, pause and take a stop and relook your policies. I think it's a very good thing. And in the deliberations, Chair, I think it will be good if we can ultimately, as Thomas says, also take cognizance of the ultimate outcome of the Davis Tax Committee. Also, the BEPS project, which hopefully will come to an end at September, when last year they look at the first 7 actions, and this year they're looking at the balance, so hopefully by September, October, they would have dealt with all 15 of the action plans, so that will be useful to see what the final outcome there is. And also to watch what's happening from the United Nations point of view. They have certainly also views as far as base erosion and profit shifting and also transfer pricing specifically is concerned. And then from the administrative point of view, nothing should stop us to see what advances we can start making from an administrative point of view.
suggestions has already been made that we should start changing our tax returns to ask for better information around transfer pricing issues. We should relook our capacity issues from a SARS perspective and see how we can beef up our transfer pricing units. And then also how we can perhaps give better guidance to business out there to make it also more predictable for them. I think just the last point here that I want to emphasize is at the end of the day, you can devise in the best rules around these issues. But we also, in this process, need to improve transparency and information, exchange of information. Because complex is, transfer pricing, and not just transfer pricing, many of these basic erosion types of transactions are very complex transactions. And unless you have the information and the right skills to deal with these issues, you can have the best rules in the world, but you will perhaps not solve the problem completely. Thank you.
We gather that unfortunately the Department of Business is not here. The chair will pursue that. And then there's the Department of Trade and Industry. Yeah.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chair.
Honourable Chair.
No, I want to ask one quick question to ask.
Very quickly.
No, I wanted to find out, is it true that there's only 15 of you in the transfer pricing unit compared to 200 or something in the UK?
I think Sudita, who's heading up the unit, would be perhaps in a better position to give you an answer.
If I can just expand on your question. In terms of the comparison, firstly, there are 20 people in the team. There's another 12 people will be incorporated in the team within the next month. We have an aim to build the team to an excess of almost 100.
I am going to plead with you too that you assist our meeting, because the requirement is that we'll come to that stage when we target in the past of our own institutions to deal with this problem. So I'm not sure, because in the report of the EFF correctly, so this is highlighted, and I know also even this condition is giving some indication to us. So will you please, let's try to be patient, and for today accept that we are having this process, let's get the response on the future. Thank you.
It's correct because it's going to open the floodgates, but on the other hand, given that half the question answered already, maybe we just stay quickly.
Thank you. A point of clarification, it's not true that the UK has 200 resources. Per their own 2013 report, they had 65 resources. They get an average return annually of £1 billion. In South Africa, our segments are larger. We have 20 resources, but we are going to double our capacity. Also, the sixth method, we are exploring it. We intend through IFSA to have a session on the sixth method later this year. So we're having a discussion. One of the challenges, though, Brazil has a unique advantage because they are able to bring legislation, administration, and technology together. So they have full details and access to the general ledgers of large companies, which makes it possible. But there is enough room to explore it, and I look currently under discussion, even at the OEC.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, just to remind the members and colleagues that the imperative for this was from a Department of Trade and Industry perspective is particularly around the opportunity for beneficiation and the role that beneficiation can play in developing South Africa and catalyzing inclusive growth. So for us, the key issue is around when companies and the media in general report that it's not possible for developmental pricing to be implemented in South Africa. We want a more nuanced and analytical approach to that. If indeed transfer pricing is taking place at the kinds of levels that the good colleagues from the budget office suggest, then clearly a 10% discount from the international price will allow for local beneficiation, for processing, particularly in rural areas, particularly in areas where unemployment is high. We need to ask questions about whether the resistance to that approach is based on fact or is it based purely on resistance to a policy. And a policy which in our view is entirely aligned with inclusive growth and development of Africa. I think the second point, Honorable Chair and members, is that we are not alone in dealing with this particular issue. A number of members have made, a number of colleagues have made that comment. I want to just state one or two. A few years back in the United Kingdom, Barclays was publicly outed, if you like, as a company that was paying very little tax in the United Kingdom. Last year, Google and Starbucks were similarly highlighting the press as companies paying extremely low levels of tax in the United Kingdom. So as South Africa, we're not alone in dealing with this issue, and I don't think that we necessarily want to portray this as an additional burden on companies operating in South Africa. What we're asking companies perhaps to do is to not necessarily only stick to the letter of the law, tax law in this case, but to stick to the spirit of the law. And if a company is actively attempting to misrepresent its profits through using transfer pricing, then it should be perhaps holding that company to account, not from a perspective of trying to add to the regulatory burden, trying to reduce investor confidence in South Africa, but expecting a company that is operating in South Africa to stick to the spirit of our tax laws and to pay its fair share of tax. Now, this may sound, Honorable Chair, a little bit like an ethical request to companies that perhaps best respond to a carrot and stick approach. But in fact, other jurisdictions are doing this. There's a movement towards a culture of what is a responsible corporate citizen and how do you define that. And a responsible corporate citizen can't be a company that actively tries to pay as little tax in a developing country such as South Africa with the kind of developmental backlogs that we have in South Africa. Now, that's not to suggest, Chair, that we shouldn't also have a carrot and stick. We must have that. But we also need to try and make sure that our corporates understand that being based in South Africa, operating in South Africa, comes with a certain responsibility, not only to make profits, but also to pay its fair share of taxes to ensure that workers are paid a reasonable wage. And so I think that would be the second broad issue that we would want to stress, Honorable Chair. The third one is really around the need for an interdepartmental, intercommittee approach to addressing this. I think as DGI, we've been part of the discussions within the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry, but we also acknowledge that there are a whole range of levers that sit outside of the Department of Trade and Industry. We don't believe that as DGI, we would be successful in addressing all of these issues. We do need both at the committee level, at the select committee level, and at the departmental and agency level, a much stronger degree of alignment and cooperation to ensure that we address this issue. But finally, Chair, just the last point is that given that the media is in the room, from a DGI perspective, we would be suggesting that we're not suggesting that there are additional burdens to be placed on investors in South Africa. Investors need to pay the tax that they are liable for in South Africa. We know that investor confidence is particularly fragile in South Africa at the moment, so we don't want to unbind that. And as chair members will know, as DTI, we did see a bit of a backlash last week around the DE code. We certainly wouldn't want to be portrayed as suggesting that we must add additional burdens to companies operating in South Africa. But companies operating in South Africa do have an obligation to pay the tax that they are liable for. And they do have a moral, at the moment, obligation to ensure that they pay a tax that is in line with the spirit of our tax laws. Thank you, Jay.
Okay, what I'm going to try to do is see whether you agree with the sort of summary I'm trying to offer. But before we call on members, just to add, we'll get the two chairs to see if they agree. So mostly it's actually very few comments of my own because there isn't time enough. It's more like a summary and some questions for consideration. Well, the first thing to do is all the deputy minister joined us to go back to the cabinet committee meeting, send his apology. I think what we're saying is that this is not new, the issue of transfer mispricing, maybe that's a better term, TN, rather than TP. In fact, an ANC researcher said to me that in the early 60s, the apartheid regime raised this issue. Obviously, they wanted to get tax for the white minority, largely, not only. But they also, it's not a new thing. And yesterday, the EFF also, I mean, they said, look, it's not a new thing. Whatever the reason, they said the truth is they did say it, and they repeated that. So I think it's not new. The second reason, I think the point I think is that we're all saying whatever laws, there are moral strength ethical issues. So I think there's agreement that that's not something that will bind business particularly, you know, appeals to morality. It's the nature of the market system that almost litigates against the given circumstances. I think we are very clear, to lesser or greater degree, we're all saying that this is not an anti-business approach. And in many senses, if the government were to get what it is due in taxes, it would be able to stimulate growth to invest in infrastructure, which the private sector also significantly benefits from. I mean, one of the major claims by, you know, investors is that the infrastructure in South Africa is not conducive to investment and greater growth and job creation. So the whole economy would think that, right? So I think it's very clear. I think what BGI is saying is not going to be an additional burden. I think what is also seeming to be clear is that we want all views to be expressed. And in that regard, what we might want to think about is look more carefully at the public hearings the trade and industry have had, and then decide whether we want further public hearings, maybe in the first part of the third quarter of Parliament. So we don't get the same submissions. But you see, when it comes to the Davis Tax Committee, we in finance have some measure of oversight over SARS and therefore some measure of feed into the processing of some of the ideas. And we intended to bring them to our committee in this quarter. But having heard that you had them, we decided to defer it. But I think many need to think about this. Maybe we do bring Professor Davis back. But if we do have hearings, the thing we need to think about, it's not generic hearings. It's a very focused, directed thing. So we pick up on where you left off. We've got the vacation, not vacation, the constituency period and so on. I think maybe we should read those reports or summaries of them. Maybe we can ask you to summarize each other's report by the third week of June. So we send it out to members. Then what we do is all of us feed into the committee secretaries. We send a note out, maybe say one of the committee secretaries is responsible for feeding ideas on, if we are to have public hearings, what precisely are the issues we're to focus on, rather than just making a broad of transfer and mispricing stroke bets. So let's think about it. There's a lot of things we're going to take a decision on here, but we can't leave things hanging in the air. See? Because somebody here, Alan and their team, is taking notes, and they must summarize the key issues, maybe with our PBO that we want to take forward. And the members are not going to cover the same ground we've already covered. Then I think we all agree that we need to extend the committees that are here. But you can see a nuance emerging from there and from Sergeant Lipo and others. So maybe what we say is, yes, it affects a whole lot of committees. But we have a trade-off between the number of committees that serve here and need for efficiency and effectiveness and speed. So there are various forms in which we can draw in other committees. Now, the committees that I mentioned here are small business, which I think is very hard to leave them out if you've got, you know, DTI. So, you know, and then there's labor mentioned. It's very hard to just ignore labor as well. And there was another committee mentioned, I can't recall, EDP, I must be throwing them in anyway. So what we can do is look at that, you know, the chair confer with the relevant chairs and see. You see, there's another way of dealing with it, is to have these three committees as the core committees, and then an outer layer where you confer with them. And at some appropriate stage, like when we have workshops and so on, we ask all the economic cluster committees, whoever wants to come, and they're on a Friday because it's easier in this sense. That it doesn't clash with other committees. It's harder in the other sense because people say they have to be back home for constituency work, right? So we have to look at maybe a Friday where we have a workshop where everybody's included. So we have to have trade-offs there. And then there's also this thing, colleagues, we need to think about, which is because if you look at our committees, they're slightly different agendas. If you look at our committee, finance, we've got 15 bills, we are told this year. We've already done three, and we've got about another four, is that right? Trades from next week. Right? This is three or four. So each of us has got different programs. And what I'm pleading for is to strike a balance between those committees that have less legislation and those that have more, so that the way to deal with it is to say that on the one hand we need firm and clear guidelines and targets, and people must help us in this regard.
But on the other hand, we don't want to plunge into taking decisions too quickly without the necessary research. The issue is very complex to explain. So there's another shade of it to think about, right? Then I think that we must also think of a sub-community structure, comrades, colleagues, where maybe we get two persons from each of these three communities that we can form, and then the subcommittee can process issues with the PBO, the research unit, and the secretariat, if you want to call them that. Then what we might want to accept also is that, look, it's perfectly understandable that SARS will be looking at issues primarily from a tax perspective. DTI mainly beneficiation and IMAP. Minerals about, you know, domicile and issues about beneficiation and so on, right? And so the committee's concern will come with slightly different perspectives. That's perfectly understandable. But we work within a framework of consensus within which we will have different perspectives. And we will have slightly different emphasis and priorities. So what? That's inevitable. So what I'm trying to say is that we need something PBO to assist us. What are the issues on which there's consensus? And there's already four or five things I've identified. The two chairs will add, and other members can add before one or slightly after one. Right? The thing that I want to raise, you know, whether we don't want greater clarity on what he's speaking about. If he tells his right, if he's talking about illegalizing transfer pricing, you're basically saying nullify transactions. International. So shouldn't we rather use words and be much clearer about what we mean by them? So I would suggest we think about using the tax mispricing. That was become a parlance. But look, I don't have confidence this with me, colleagues. It's fine by me. I'm just telling you what is in my head. Right? Tax mispricing. But also we write greater clarity with due respect than you offered. And you can see when the EFF speaks, there is a different meaning given to the term. So what I would like to ask is to simply explain what tax pricing, what tax mispricing is, and what BEPS is. What is the relationship between tax mispricing and BEPS? That's not very clear. Actually, you suggest, or the EFF that suggests, I can't recall, that tax mispricing is a form of BEPS. But then there are people from within the tax industry that argue that no, you must separate these issues. They are related, but separate. So we need consensus here on what exactly we're talking about. So I would plead, comrades, colleagues, that we ask PBO to do this, to clarify simply, clearly what the issues are and bring it to that workshop. But I also think we must be a bit clearer about what are the boundaries. You see, there are a lot of issues that are being raised that are, strictly speaking, not germane. If we want SARS and national occasion to deal with tax mispricing, we have to do what I think Mr. Chairperson Zico was saying. In a phased approach, see, I think what we can do is have a program. Maybe it should be realistic for the whole term of Parliament, right? And broad deadlines. I say, after the workshop and so on, these are the things we think are achievable. We can't be peaceful on the one hand, but we can't be holistic on the other. We need another trade-off there. If there's something in between, I think it's something sparked in my head when Comrade Lillipo said, look, don't think you can solve a matter overnight, but you can be incremental, I think was the term he was trying to use. So, no. The only issue that we have to clarify is issues about legality and illegality. Because I think it's this point Davis made about, you know, nullifying transactions, we don't need to nullify is mispricing. The issue we have to ask also is the consequences for tax havens. Now, some of those countries are very poor. Presumably what they survive on is what they get. And these are also moral and political issues for a progressive developmental state. The sixth method, you see, the interesting thing about that is it does talk about the Latin American experience of countries that are similar to our, the expected industries countries. And I'm glad to say that PBO and SARS is already beginning to look at the sixth method. But I think, clearly, I think minerals and energy, minerals in particular, will be interested in all of us. What exactly is the sixth method? To what extent is it applicable to South Africa, and so in what form? That's another area you want to provide greater clarity to us. Even if we finally say, we've considered the sixth method, but we're saying no to it. There are other issues I think we can agree on, you know, that actually need, despite not being naive about moral issues,
to guide business, as you say. Those things can be done. The coordination of institutions on debt, I mean, that we agree on. But an interesting new thing came out, I'd like the chair also to mull about this, that maybe the right to the Minister of the Joint Letter and the DGCC to the DGs to say, these four or five committees are the core committees dealing with this matter. We would like an interdepartmental structure to be set out that reports to Parliament and obviously to the executive on this matter. And maybe we need to think about writing such a letter, think about that. There's a lot of other issues I'll drop. On the issue of engaging with the JSE, we can think of various forms of engaging with them. It doesn't have to be a public hearing necessarily, but let's ask for opinions from various members of the House and also PBO and other structures on that. The workshop, I think we're agreeing on, but again, it can't just be a workshop. It has to be very clear what it is we're seeking to do. Otherwise, we're going to have endless discussions. You feel like I hear people saying, it's a very valuable input. It's a very valuable discussion. So 21 days later, I mean, you know, it's useful to say, I think people mean it, but the value of a discussion, ultimately, what gets effected in legislation and in practice and programs. So I think there's a general consensus that the law needs to be tightened, but in what form, we don't know. The Finance Committee has also raised this thing already. We think that SARB needs to strengthen its capacity and its range of skills to deal with debt. We said it already in a written report, as far as I can tell. We should also, you see, members here, particularly the chairs, go out of the country. And we attend things like the parliamentary networks on the World Bank and IMF and all of that. We need to actually constantly raise these issues in those. I think we go to the IPU. So it's a multi-pronged strategy. We need to have discussions about it. Let's just do it and begin to raise the issues to the extent we can. I don't want to get involved with the EFF. There's another occasion for that on what historical materialism means in terms of balance of forces, task forces, etc., etc., and many too. But I don't think that this will be a party political issue, they themselves think. And that sense, it doesn't matter who they what. We look at the specific issues. But just that the EFF as a party has put a formal paper, I think also we should ask other parties within 3 weeks to present their submissions. So if the ANC research unit wants to go to the ANC chairperson, make a submission to PBO, I think it will be given 3 weeks to do so. The DA and any other party that's here, I think they should be given 3 weeks to do so. What I also want to finally suggest, so that you don't get things hanging in the air. If the three chairs meet within 7 days, look at these issues, get an interim report from the PBO by Tuesday next week, sometime between Monday morning and Friday, I think the three chairs should meet with the economic development chair and put these things together and then decide on a way forward, and then we send out a little note to all the members in our committees and let them comment on the way forward so everybody is being involved. So those are the things that, you know, enter my head. I would like the two chairs to comment and then ask members if in broad principle you agree with this approach. Sorry, you don't say. Okay. Does anyone want to add to the law? Okay. So that's it. Let us thank everybody who came, and let us thank the members here. It's not the three chairs alone that are responsible, or the four chairs. The members have to be actively participating. Thank you indeed. It's 5 to 1, 7 minutes to 1. Fortunately, there's no lunch for you, so you can get your lunch.